Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, July 31st. I'm Wilder Bliss, Brosmer Brown, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Humboldt Harbor District gives update on wind energy port, and Whale Gulch School to likely close temporarily. Stay tuned, news on those stories coming right up. Humboldt County is poised for a major offshore wind energy project, and its port facilities make up a significant project in itself. Daniel Mintz reports.
What will be the first offshore wind energy port terminal on the West Coast is being planned for Humboldt Bay, and the Harbor District has updated the community on what it will entail. Rob Homeland, the district's director of development, explained what the project is and what it will look like from various locations in a video posted online last week. The Bayfront project site is adjacent to the town of Samoa, and the parts making up the wind turbines, which will be up to 1,000 feet tall, including blades, will be brought to it and then assembled here. A 600,000 square foot building for wind turbine manufacturing is also planned for future build-out. Homeland explained the project's components and how much of the assembly happens in the waters of Humboldt Bay.
Wherever they're manufactured, each one of those parts has to find themselves on a ship, and then all of those ships have to end up in one location so it can all be put together. This is what the Port of Humboldt is going to specialize in. So we will likely receive the parts to make the floating foundation, which is a large barge the turbine goes on top of. So that's what you see here. This large yellow structure is a floating foundation. And this circle here is where the wind turbine tower gets connected, and then it is built up from there. So what you're seeing here is a floating foundation that was assembled on land. It's being moved across the ground onto the semi-submersible barge, which will then sink beneath it. Then this yellow floating foundation will be floating in the water, and it will be brought over to a crane that's just outside of this photo, where the wind turbine will be built on top of it as the floating foundation is floating in the water, with the crane and all of the equipment lifting from the land as it's built in the water.
The 600-foot-tall wind turbine towers will be mounted on floating foundations up to 425 feet wide. Then power hubs and three blades will be connected to each, making completed turbines ready for towing through the bay and out to sea. The turbines will be towed to an area 20 miles offshore, and that's where the district role ends. Operation of offshore wind energy system is a separate project with wind energy companies at the helm. Homeland explained how most of the terrestrial project area will be used.
The vast majority of the site is open laydown area with compacted gravel, where blades, tower sections, nacelles, anchors, other components of offshore wind turbines would be shipped in from other ports. Cranes, like this crawler crane here, this big yellow one, would pick them up off the ship and then move them around on the site and stack them up so that the site is prepared to assemble the wind turbines. We are also building into the permitting for the project up to 600,000 square feet to manufacture components such as blades at the project site. Though at least at first, we're primarily going to focus exclusively on staging integration and build in the capacity and the opportunity to do advanced manufacturing in the future. The site will also include the assembly of floating foundations. I'll show you another version of this map shortly where the floating foundation assembly is on the opposite side, but generally we would receive large components of the floating foundations and put them all together and then launch them into the water. So in this case, you can see the components kind of coming together here. And then once it's fully assembled, it is launched into the water using that semi-submersible barge I explained earlier. And then you've got the floating foundation in the water. From there, you can do one of two things with it. You can either put it into wet storage, which is kind of a parking lot for the equipment as it's waiting for its turn at the crane, at the wharf. Or if the crane and wharf are ready, then you can bring it over and begin the vertical assembly process.
Homeland showed visual simulations of what it will look like. The most visual impact is at the Eureka Waterfront's boardwalk area down from F Street. There, the cranes, turbines under construction, and assembled turbines waiting to be towed will become prominent fixtures of the viewscape. From farther locations like the Arcata Marsh Sanctuary's main parking lot, those elements will be distant, but still the most visually prominent aspect of the bay's Eureka shore. But Homeland said there will be almost no visual effects from nearby inland locations.
At this specific location, at the intersection of F and Fifth Streets in Eureka, if it weren't for all the buildings and trees, you'd be able to see the project. But because of the buildings and trees, there's no way you'll be able to see the project, even if you really back up. So throughout the majority of Eureka, Arcata, throughout the region, you want to be able to see the project. Good rule of thumb is if you can't see the smokestack, you're not going to be able to see the project.
The district's funding for the project vaulted this year with a $426 million Federal Department of Transportation grant to cover half the project's cost. In addition to covering costs of the terminal's construction, the grant will pay for environmental restoration, a multi-purpose trail, an eco shoreline transition, a solar power system, recreation access facilities, support for dredging, and a $6 million community benefit program helping tribes, fishermen, and residents near the project site. The district is in the process of soliciting a developer and operator of the project. The project will be built in three phases. Permitting will happen in 2025, and if construction begins in late 2026 as expected, the project's first phase will be ready for operation in 2029. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
A Whale Gulch School temporary closure will be discussed at a special meeting of the Leggett Valley Unified School District Board on Thursday, Lauren Schmidt reports.
As previously reported by KMUD News, during the July regular meeting of the Leggett Valley School District, parents, students, and teachers of Whale Gulch School, a campus located south of Shelter Cove in a remote part of Mendocino County, accessible through Humboldt, were alarmed by the possibility of the school's closure being listed on the agenda. The issue arises from the attempt to renew a sublease agreement for the school property between the district and the Whale Gulch School Education Association. And in doing so, the school's insurance provider announced it cannot offer coverage for the remote school because it was not constructed under the Division of the State Architect, DSA code. While the school itself may not have any violations, it still needs to undergo a certification process to be deemed seismically safe. The lease for the school campus expired on June 30th, and it is unlikely the school will reopen by August 19th, the first day of the new school year. This critical issue will be discussed in a special meeting of the Leggett Valley School District tomorrow, Thursday, August 1st. Parents, teachers, and students are urging the school board to explore alternatives instead of closing the iconic campus.
We should fight tooth and nail to keep it open.
That was Israel De Lamas.
I went to Whale Gulch School from first grade to my sophomore year. I lived right down the road, and it was like a magical fairy tale environment that when I tell people about it, their minds are blown. All my years of growing up in Humboldt, I did end up going to a few different schools in my high school career after I left Whale Gulch. And I'll say that Whale Gulch was far by the best education I've ever received. The first thought of like hearing about that it's even an option to close it doesn't seem like a reality to me. Like, I feel like it shouldn't even be looked at as an option.
Another former student, Tyler Pietila, agrees.
I went to Whale Gulch, kindergarten to 12th grade, grew up in the community, and was one of the most important things that formed me and the people around me. I would hope they can realize how big of an impact closing that school would have on the generations to come. A lot of people really rely on that school to teach their kids and, you know, being a center point for the community. It's a place where people will meet in case of a flood or a fire. It's a place where we all would raise our kids. It's an important part of the community.
For additional background on the issue, we spoke with one of the school's founders and active member of the Whale Gulch School Education Association.
My name is Sandy Tillis, and I live in Whale Gulch, and I'm one of the founding members of founding mothers of this Whale Gulch School back in the early 80s. I'm the treasurer of the Whale Gulch School Education Association, and we sublease the land that's owned by the community to the Leggett Valley Unified School District.
Since early spring, the WGS Education Association and the district have been in negotiations to renew the school's lease.
Leasing our land to Leggett Valley Unified School District for 30 years in a very cooperative relationship.
However, in that process, an obscure building code was identified that put the school at risk of closing.
Bureaucratic ed code was found that our buildings, even though they're been permitted by the Mendocino County Building Department and up to California state standards for a public school, is supposed to be under the Department of or the Division of State Architecture. Although we are private land and they do not hold jurisdiction over us, so the Division of State Architects is not demanding that we fall under their compliance code. Unfortunately, the board of Leggett Valley and the superintendent would be held liable if there was a lawsuit about our buildings if during a catastrophe. It's about earthquake safety and things like that. So if there was a big earthquake and somebody got hurt and had a lawsuit, then the board would be liable. And that's really what we're dealing with, is the liability of the board.
KMUD News reached out to the Division of the State Architect, DSA, by email. Jennifer Alita, with their Office of Public Affairs, was unable to answer my questions, such as how long or strenuous the process would be to bring Whale Gulch School into compliance, best and worst case scenario. But she did say that the issue at hand is in regards to the Field Act, which imposes important requirements on California K-12 public schools and community colleges that are not present in other types of construction approval processes, such as having a licensed design professional prepare drawings and specifications for constructions, and having a DSA-certified inspector oversee the construction process, which was not the case for Whale Gulch School. And although it was built to county code, all public school building permits are under the jurisdiction of the DSA. Unable to see a clear path forward, Tillis sought the help of elected officials.
We're also working with Senator McGuire's office. Dan Jurdy, our supervisor, is helping out. So we're also looking for perhaps a political solution to this problem.
KMA News reached out to the supervisor who represents Whale Gulch at the county seat.
Yeah, I'm Dan Jurdy. I'm the county supervisor for the northern part of the Mendocino Coast and includes Whale Gulch. And as I understand it, the issue is closure is not being driven by the state of California. It's really a decision by the Leggett School District. And I see how important schools are as a community resource, both for the children and for the families and the entire community. I really hope that the Leggett School Board finds the grit to vote to keep the school open. And I hope they realize just how important it is for the Whale Gulch School to continue as it has for several decades.
When asked if he has any sway in the matter, Supervisor Jurdy says,
you know, the school district really doesn't have a lot of connection to the county government, so it's really a decision of the Leggett School District.
So we reached out to the board president for the Leggett Valley Unified School District.
My name is Jessica Romer, and I am the president of the Leggett Valley Unified School District School Board, and we have two campuses. One of them is in Leggett, and the other is in Whale Gulch.
Romer also explained the issue from her vantage point as the board president.
What started it is the Whale Gulch School is owned by the Whale Gulch Education Association, and it is a school that Leggett has rented. since its existence came in 20 years ago. And this year came up the 10-year renewal on their lease. And so in process of doing that, we discovered that our insurance company was going to bow out, and the insurance for the school district, it's through the school, a small school association, so it's a mutual risk pool. And they had no concept that Whale Gulch was not owned by the district. And they do have a way that they can insure rental buildings, but any school building has to comply with DS Division of School Architecture and the Field Act, and the buildings do not. And because that exists, there would be actually no insurance for the school, no liability insurance of any type. And in doing so, the district would be taking on full liability for anything that happened at the school.
And like others in the community, she says the board is seeking solutions.
We've gone to actually three different legal firms trying to see if there are any way, any exceptions, any way to get around this. And up until now, we have not found any.
Without insurance to cover liability, the district states they cannot open the school. However, Romer mentioned that the board has created a working group that is collaborating to ensure that students receive the education they need while simultaneously addressing the issue of obtaining a DSA certification.
And the concept was, our last meeting, was to start the kids out on remote learning and then move in DSA-approved classrooms onto the campus. And that way, then the insurance company would approve those, and then we could get kids back on campus. That means us leasing portable buildings, which are already certified for DSA for classrooms, and having them brought into the grounds and school held in the portable buildings. But in the meantime, we can't bring kids onto campus into the buildings. And it's heart-wrenching because that's such a beautiful school and such a beautiful campus and such a great community. It's just, this sucks all the way around. I don't want to see the school go away.
During the last board meeting, parents expressed that they believe the school is safe and are willing to sign liability waivers. But Romer says,
you can't sign away the rights of children. And so there's no way to that we can see going forward using the buildings until they become approved. If we allow any kids to go in, then not only is the school negligent, but also each one of the board members is individually negligent because we're allowing something to occur that the education code and everything says, period, do not do. And so we talked with Southern Humboldt to see if possibly they had classrooms at Whitethorn that we could use temporarily. Look to see where else we could bring modulars into. And this is still it's a work in progress how to overcome the situation.
Again, there are no known structural issues identified at Whale Gulch School. However, it remains unclear what steps will need to be taken until a DSA representative can visit the site.
It's compliant issues in the fact that the buildings are not DSA certified. And so that makes them non-compliant on itself. Whether or not there's any structural issues that would have to be corrected before the buildings could become compliant, the only way they'll know is going through the process.
And the first step in that process towards compliance is a review by a DSA certified architect.
They will have to basically look at the buildings and decide if there are issues, and DSA may ask them to actually go back and do some actual testing of some of the components on the buildings or perhaps something else. And that process, we've been told, can take a couple months even to get the process started. And then it can last for up to a year.
Members of the Whale Gulch School community feared that the district may have ulterior motives for wanting to close the school due to its rural nature and geographical distance from the main campus. Romer responds,
I can personally say that certainly is not the issue here in the school district, that, you know, we hold Whale Gulch to really be a valuable school. And it is dissimilar from Leggett because it is a very small school, but it's an incredible school. And so the district had no intentions of closing operations and has no intentions of shutting down services. it's just, how can we provide them right now? And that's the crux of our entire problem.
The Leggett Valley Unified School District Board will be holding a special hybrid meeting tomorrow, Thursday, August 1st, at the Leggett campus and via Zoom, to discuss the potential adoption of a resolution to continue operating the Will Gold School program while the district explores option to address the compliance issue, which will likely include a temporary closure.
The resolution is basically saying that we will be shutting down operations at the Well Gulch in the campus, meaning the buildings, and we will continue to look for modular buildings and solutions to the problem and continue exploring with the Well Gulch School Association to try to get the kids back in.
Speaking again with Sandy Tillis of the Will Gulch School Education Association about the solutions currently on the table, she expressed concerns over its feasibility.
Very, very expensive. Funding would come from, we have no idea. We're a small school district. We don't have a lot of extra funds for these kinds of things. And it would be such a long time frame that we wouldn't be able to get back in the buildings for maybe 6 months to a year. The other possibility would be to become a charter school. And that takes a long time as well. And a third option would be to bring mobile units to the property. But that is, in order to house all our students, that would be 4 or 5 units. And it's expensive. And it takes a long time to get the plumbing and the electricity and everything set up. And so that would, we wouldn't be ready for August 19th with that either. So we don't see a real quick solution to this problem. We feel that we're still looking for ways to protect the school board members and the superintendent, and also to get new insurance, because the insurance got denied as well when the superintendent revealed that we were leased property and that didn't fly with them. So we're, you know, trying to navigate the insurance as well. We feel like if we can get the insurance back in place and assure the school board members that the liability they face is not dire, we're hoping we can get the kids back on campus.
But in the meantime, the school board will be voting to enact a temporary closure of Will Gold School until all other options have been explored.
This is a very difficult situation because education and children's lives affect every aspect of the home. And we are very aware of that, and we want to do the best that we can, and I trust that we are.
Tomorrow's special meeting of the Leggett Valley Unified School District Board of Trustees will open to the public at 9:30 a.m. and begin with a public comment period where attendees will be given 3 minutes to share their feedback. They will also be discussing the resolution which will impact the use of Will Gold School. KMI News will be in attendance and share the highlights. To learn more about tomorrow's meeting or to find the Zoom link, you can go to www.leggett.k12.ca.us.
In state news, firefighters gain some ground on the Park Fire as suspected arsonist enters not guilty plea.
Containment on the Park Fire burning in Butte and Tehama counties has increased from 12% to 14% as of Tuesday morning, according to CAL FIRE. CAL FIRE spokesperson Sergio Arellano says approximately 5,500 firefighters are combating the blaze along Highway 22. Arellano says winds are dying down today to about 5 miles per hour, which makes the fire easier to contain. However, he says the higher temperatures today are making it more dangerous for the frontline firefighters.
So the hotter it is, the more taxing it is on our firefighters that are out there on the front lines. You know, with the heat and the heat from the fire plus the heat in the climate, it causes obviously more fatigue. So we have to be very aware that they're getting proper nutrition and also that they're properly hydrating.
Arellano says 116 residences have been destroyed and there have been no injuries or fatalities so far. Thousands of people are still under evacuation orders. He says it could take several weeks for the fire to be fully contained. Updates on the fire are available at fire.ca.gov. For KPFA News, I'm Yun Chen.
San Francisco activists mark 59th anniversary of the passage of Medicare and Medicaid.
Eyes and teeth, don't want to lose them. Local clinics, I want to use them.
That was Hallie Hammer. She's a resident of Berkeley and a longtime member of the California Alliance for Retired Americans, or CARA. CARA is a grassroots senior advocacy organization. Hallie sang multiple songs in front of the San Francisco Federal Building. She was among 20 others who came to represent the millions of Americans who rely on essential social services like Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security benefits. According to the Social Security Administration, as of February 2024, roughly 1 in 5 residents receive Social Security benefits. This includes retirement benefits and disability insurance. The U.S. Census Bureau says about 12.5 million people are enrolled in both Medicare and Medicaid. Hene Kelly is the CARA legislative chair. She says the fight for Social Security and Medicaid is not a selfish act of an older generation.
You have been fighting for 50 and 60 years to keep what you have, and now we need to keep that for our children and grandchildren.
Many Californians are concerned about cuts to these services by Republican lawmakers. According to the White House, 80% of House Republicans agreed on a budget that calls for over $1.5 trillion in cuts to Social Security. That budget also repeals Biden's insulin cap and makes cuts to the Affordable Care Act, among other things. Organizers from CARA wrote a letter to Speaker Emerita Nancy Pelosi and the Social Security Administration urging them to protect social services. Art Persico is a co-convener for the California Alliance for Retired Americans Community Action Team. He read the letter aloud.
Both Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security are our country's most essential social insurance programs. It should not become just another investment opportunity for wealthy corporations and investment bankers.
The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services also released a statement for the Medicare and Medicaid anniversary. It said cuts would be detrimental because children with Medicaid are more successful in schools and the Affordable Care Act has reduced mortality for millions. Corey Powell McCoy is a district director for Nancy Pelosi. He said Pelosi's office is committed to codifying healthcare rights for vulnerable populations.
We will never relent in our fight to build a healthier, more secure future for all Americans, expanding coverage, bringing down premiums, and slashing prescription drug costs.
Californians can vote on Proposition 35 this November. It would permanently authorize a tax on managed care organizations, which are set to expire in 2026. For KPFA Radio, I'm Audie McAfee, and here's Hallie Hammer again.
We worked for those benefits. That's why they are there. They are our salvation. They must be our right. We need to protect and defend them with our collective might.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening, and thanks to our reporters Daniel Mintz, Lauren Schmidt, Audie McCaffey, and Yoon Chan. And thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley. Reporting from KMUD Studio in Redway, I'm Wilder Bliss Brosmo Brown, KMUD News Youth and Journalism Intern.